ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम् 10th canto chapter 35 verses 18 and 19 the gopis sing of krishna mani dara kachit agayanam ga mani dara kachit aganayam ga Mani dara kachit aganayam gaha. Malaya daite ganda tulasyaha. Malaya daite ganda tulasyaha. Prayaniyo nu charasya kandam sehe. Praksipam pujam agayata yatra manidara kachit aganayam ga malhaya dahita ganda tulasyaha Prayaniyo nu charasya kandam se Praksi panbujam agayati yatra Mani dara kachit aganayam ga Malhaya dayita ganda tulasyaha Pranayino nu charasya kandam se Praksi pabujam agayati yatra Kwanita veno rabavanchita chita.
Kwanita veno rabavanchita
Krishna Manavasata Krishna Grihiyaha. Guna Gunarnam Agugatya Harinyo. Gopika Iva Vimukta Grihasaha. Mani, a string of gems. Dara, holding. Kvachit, somewhere. Aganayam, counting. Ka, the cows. Malaya, with a flower garland. And Dahita, of his beloved. Ganda, having the fragrance. Tulasya, the tulasi flowers upon which. Pranayina, loving. Anucharasya, of a companion. Kada, at some time. Amse, on the shoulder. Praksipan, throwing. Bhujam, his arm. Agayata, he sang. Yatra, when. Kwadnita, vibrated. They knew of his flute. Rava, by the sound. Vanchita, stolen. Chitta, their hearts. Krishnam, Krishna. Anvasata, they sat down beside. Krishna, of the black deer. Grihina, I'm sorry, Grihinya, the wives. Guna Gana, of all transcendental qualities. Arnam, the ocean. Anugatya, approaching. Harinya, the does. Gopika, the gopis. Eva, just like. Vimukta, having given up. Griha, for homes and family. Asa, their hopes. Translation. Now Krishna is standing somewhere, counting his cows on the string of gems. He wears a garland of tulasi flowers that bear the fragrance of his beloved, and he has thrown his arm over the shoulder of an affectionate cowherd boy. As Krishna plays his flute and sings, the music attracts the black deer's wives, who approach that ocean of transcendental qualities and sit down beside him. Just like us cowherd girls, they have given up all hope for happiness in family life. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that in the afternoon, Sri Krishna dressed himself in new clothing and then went out to call the cows home. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the following information about the transcendental cows of Vrindavan. For each of the four colors of cows, white, red, black, and yellow, there are 25 subdivisions, making a total of 100 colors. All such qualities are being colored like sandalwood pulp tilak, speckled, or having a head shaped like a mridanga drum, create 8 further groups. To count these 108 groups of cows, distinguished by color and form, Krishna is using a string of 108 jeweled beads. Thus, when Krishna calls out, "Hey, Dwali," the name of a white cow, a whole group of white cows come forward. And when he calls, "Hamsi, Chandini, Ganga, Mukta," and so on, the 24 other groups of white cows come. The reddish cows are called Aruni, Kunkuma, Saraswati, etc. The blackish ones, Shamala, Dulama, Jamuna, etc. And the yellowish ones, Pita, Pingala, Haritalika. Those in the groups with tilak marks on their forehead are called Chitrita, Chitra Tilaka, Dirgda Tilaka, and Tilaka. And there are groups known as Mridanga Mukhi, Mridanga Head, Simha Mukhi, Lion Head, and so on. Thus being called by name, the cows are coming forward and Krishna thinking that when it's time to bring them back from the forest, none should be forgotten. He is counting them on his jeweled beads. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyanajana Savakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapti Tam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swam Padantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Krishna, the gopis are speaking about Krishna's activities. They're singing a beautiful song describing Krishna's intimate loving relationships with his associates in Sri Vrindavan Dham. The description is so sweet and so intricate that they describe everything in detail. The garland that he wears is a tulsi garden. And they describe it in such a way that it has the fragrance of his beloved on the garland itself. He sings, he plays the flute, and the deer, their wives, are attracted by the sound. And then they come and sit beside him. And here, the cowherd girls, they start speaking about themselves. They have given up all happiness for family life. So when one can get attracted to Krishna, then everything in this world seems, what we say, a useless void. When the conditioned soul is attracted to different things, and that attraction is long-term due to the association of matter. And to break that attraction means to be free from suffering. Because material attraction is the basis of material desire, which causes one to act against one's best interest. To fulfill material desire is like trying to fill a cup of water with the cup having so many holes in it at the same time. You're putting something in it, but nothing stays. That's material desires. So here, these descriptions by the gopis themselves, who are so much absorbed in Krishna, that their love just pours over in such beautiful literary embellishments of poetry and ornamentations, that they are actually expressing their own love for Krishna through these and their own desire to associate with Krishna. But Krishna, he mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that his love is equal to all living entities. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvaishastina priya. People don't understand this in this material world. They think God is partial by the way things happen, or he's partial by according to different types of bodies. Srila Prabhupada was saying that Krishna's love is perfect, equal and eternal. Therefore, his love is always extended to all living beings. He doesn't discriminate between the types of bodies that the living entities have. Therefore, he can only be equal in all his loving relationships with his parts and parcels. That's the material world. But in the spiritual world, there's a certain extra added feature of his love, that he shows intimacy in that loving relationship, that he's reciprocating with the cows in such a beautiful way that, and Nanda Maharaj, we know, he's a gopa, and he has so many cows. He has 900,000 cows. When Srila Prabhupada describes this, he says, if you try to understand that according to the geographical measurement of the land of Vrindavan, you would think, how is it possible? Not only that, but Krishna has billions of cowherd friends also, and gopis of the same number. That's just a number to describe something that's unlimited. But in the spiritual, it's not that he's stacking them up one on top of the other so they can fit, and they just go straight up, just like you see in the material world when they can't fit anything else in, they just go up, you know. So these big buildings, people on top of each other. But in the spiritual realm, everything is natural, fits nicely, and there's room, plenty of room for more. There's no limitation. Because we can't perceive, due to our limited senses and minds and our conditioning, how spirit can accommodate so many various groups of unlimited personalities in such a, what we say, a describable length of geography. Doesn't make sense at all. But if spirit could be measured by matter, then matter would be equal to spirit. Therefore, spirit is always transcendental and not understandable through material calculations and understandings. That's why it's called achintya. Now, Krishna's love here is being expressed to the cows. He's counting each and every cow, and he has japa beads. We chant his name on the beads, and he chants the names of the cows on the beads. So, if one returns to the spiritual world and has, and somehow or other gets the great benediction of becoming a cow, one's eternal swarup, eternal mood of loving relationship, then Krishna is going to call you every day. And on his beads, with great enthusiasm and great affection. And he doesn't forget one cow. And all the cows are eager, and they're anticipating Krishna's call. So when he calls, like, hey, Dwavali, that's the name of a white cow. All the white cows think, oh, he's calling our group, so they all run forward. Because they're eager just to hear the sound of Krishna's voice creates such attraction in their minds that they can't do anything else but run towards that voice. Everything about Krishna is all attractive. And his cows are very dear to Krishna. Sometimes we go into the understanding how dear the cows are to Krishna. We just mentioned Krishna is equal to all. But it says in the Bhagavatam in various places that the cows, the brahmanas, women, children, and old people are by nature dependent on others for their livelihood and maintenance. And therefore, they are, in one sense, what we say, helpless. So, it says that out of the five, the most dear to Krishna, now this might sound contradictory, how can some Krishna be equal, but at the same time something be more dear? It says that the Brahmins and the cows are the, Krishna gives them, what we say, special attention because they're more dependent on Krishna than the other groups. And out of the two, the cows supersede the Brahmanas. Now Krishna, he's called Gobramani Hitaya Jagahitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Govindaya. Govinda, one who gives pleasure to the cows, the land, and the senses. But Krishna has a particular name that is even distinct when it comes to the cow. He's called Gopal! Jayo, Gopal. He's Gopal. He has a particular name just for the cows, Gopal. So he gives his, he likes to be called Gopal, one who protects the cows. Pala means protection, one who gives protection to the cows. That protection is His love. And the cows are all living entities in Vrindavan are attracted to Krishna unlimitedly and constantly. It says that sometimes when the cows are chewing on their grass and they hear the sound of Krishna's flute, they become stunned. The grass stops being chewed, the cows stand there motionless, and they look like wooden statues. There's no movement. And if one were to be able to perceive that vision, they would think, that's not alive. It's not, can't be. And Krishna's flute just stuns. And even the rivers, it says that when Krishna blows his flute, the rivers reverse their direction, and then they make little swirls, and they go straight up in the air and dancing in ecstasy to hear the sound of Krishna's flute. The birds fall out of the trees. The trees itself and turn in direction of the sound of the flute. So Krishna's flute attracts everything. It says that if one could hear the sound of the universe, there's an ultimate principle of sound within the universe, and that is Krishna's flute. Some people say it's the sound of the Gayatri Mantra. That sound is so subtle, but it's Krishna playing his flute, and what is he doing? He's doing the same thing that he's doing in the spiritual world. All living entities are being attracted by his flute. And what is that attraction? That it's so sweet and so irresistible that no one can consider going on with material life. Now that's a problem. That could be a problem. If you get so attracted to Krishna that you look around and you look at your wife, your husband, your kids, your possessions, your everything, you think, who needs it? Do we want to come to that stage? That's scary, isn't it? For some of us, it could be a little scary, right? And some people think, well, you know, I don't want to be too Krishna conscious because that might be what happens. Then I have to kind of... And it says here, the cowherd girls, they say, just like us cowherd girls, we have given up all hope for happiness in family life. So whatever happiness one is still somewhat dependent on for their activities in this world becomes useless. But that's not a benediction everybody wants, right? It's a little scary. Krishna's going to take everything. Yeah, Krishna can take everything away, but he can't do it all at once. That's not fair. He has to do it in increments. This is a program of installments. I'll surrender in installments, right? My first installment is I'll chant your Hari, the holy names. The second installments, and I'll read the books, and I'll even do some service. Third installments, but you know, don't go too far, Krishna. You know, it's a little dangerous there. There's certain things that you know I have really worked hard for all my life, and you know I still love you, but you know. So Krishna somehow or other. But here, if you were to hear a sound of Krishna's flute, just like the cows. And this explains that actually that one beautiful pastime in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Lord Brahma stole all the cows and cowherd boys, Krishna remanifested that for the same forms exactly according to their natures, colors, idiosyncrasies, personalities, gestures, every aspect of their existence was remanifested by Krishna in such a way that no one could tell the difference between the actual originals and the incarnations of Krishna who assumed these various forms. And the cows, when they saw their calves, who are actually Krishna himself in the form of their own calves, they ran so fast that they broke away from the hold of the cowherd men. And the cowherd men were thinking, what's happening? We never saw the cows act so erratically. And they just start charging towards their calves. And they were licking their calves and offering the calves milk. And even some of the cows who already dried up were giving milk. Because their calves were so lovable, they actually were Krishna himself, that they could only just pour out their love in the form of their milk. So Krishna will, we want that. We pray, my dear Lord, please attract me away from this material energy. I still see something important or something attractive in this material energy. But if Krishna sends you special mercy, as Prabhupada used to say himself, if Krishna wants to favor you, he gives you everything. But if Krishna wants to really favor you, he takes everything away. Prabhupada said, that's what he did to me. He took everything away. And then you're left with just Krishna. Haribol. And so we think, well, all right, I want to come to that stage, but I want to be ready for it. But you'll never be ready for it. It has to happen according to Krishna's arrangement. And then when it happens according to Krishna's arrangement, just like we see that even Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada is a nitya siddha. He came into this world to perform the activities of reclaiming the fallen souls as a representative of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His prediction in this world was mentioned in the Shastras. It was even spoken by Krishna to Ganga Devi 5,000 years ago. There are many indications of Prabhupada's appearance in this world by Krishna, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There is at least 3 different Shastric predictions. But we see in the life of Srila Prabhupada that he was a grihastha, and he had some children. He was very dedicated to his spiritual master. But at one time, his spiritual master decided to, appear to Srila Prabhupada in the dream and said, take sannyas. And that, of course, was after Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had disappeared from the planet. And Srila Prabhupada, he was so, as he said, mortified, that he went immediately in the middle of the night to his godbrother, Sridhar Swami, and wanted to speak about the dream he had with his spiritual master. And that was the first time. The second time, it happened again. It happened twice. And Prabhupada said, I have to give up my family. I have to give up my everything. But then later he said he was so thankful for that. He was very thankful for that because he said later, now I have a big family without the botheration of a wife. So he was thanking Krishna for that. Just recently I read one godbrother also had a similar situation. He writes about it in a Vyasa Puja offering this year to Srila Prabhupada, where Srila Prabhupada appeared to him in a dream and told him to take sannyas. The same thing that happened to Prabhupada. And he was married for more than 25 years. He had a nice family. The marriage was very Krishna conscious. Everything was nice. And he was a very successful preacher within the Grihastha ashram, his wife also. But when he got that dream, he was also shocked. As Prabhupada was shocked by his spiritual master. And Prabhupada talked to him in the dream, and he asked Prabhupada, I have to give up everything. Prabhupada said, you're a great preacher. You can actually do wonders spreading Krishna consciousness. In the sannyas ashram, he'll give you more advantage. So Prabhupada was pushing him. And finally, he accepted, and he writes about it, but initially it was very difficult to accept that instruction. Extremely difficult. So, but when the spiritual master calls, or Krishna calls us through the spiritual master, then the devotee thinks how to do it. Not why should I do it, but how to do it. So that's the mercy of the Lord. We pray not to become attracted or lose attracted for anything in this material world. Because everything in this material world is extraneous, or what we say, superfluous to the soul. The soul cannot be happy with anything in this material world. Things in this material world support our existence on the bodily and mental platform, but they're not the source of happiness, nor are they a source of success in life. Therefore, the mercy of the Lord, coming through the association of the Vaishnavas and engagement in devotional service, purifies our consciousness from all these attractions to the immaterial energy. And then the devotee wants only Krishna, to serve Krishna. That's all. That's the residence of Vrindavan. There's no question of them not serving Krishna. But the loving relationship between Krishna and the devotees are so sweet, so deep, and so full of variegatedness that it says one of the names of Krishna is Gopi Vallabha. That's one of his names, Gopi Vallabha. And the acharyas translate the name Gopi Vallabha as one who gives newer and newer pleasure to the gopis. Not only pleasure to the gopis, but newer and more variety forms of pleasure. So transcendental pleasure is not static. This material happiness is limited and always static. It goes to a certain level of what we say, satisfaction, and then reverses itself down to misery. That's the nature of everything in this material world. I was just reading some statement by Krishna. It's written somewhere. Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes the statement in one of his writings, where Krishna is speaking. He said that the miseries in this material world, I created that. Now, I didn't do that just to give you a difficulty or make you suffer. I did that simply to so you wouldn't want to stay in this place. Just so you could give up the desire to try to find satisfaction or permanency in this material world. So that's Krishna's mercy. When he takes everything away and when he presents a situation where we have to leave, you know, our attractions and attachments in this material world. And that's, we see many times we're given that opportunity. Are we going to take Krishna or are we going to take Maya? And every time we take Maya, it becomes harder in our Krishna consciousness. And every time we take Krishna, Krishna opens up his mercy more and more to the devotee. What is that mercy? He gives more and more unlimited opportunities for service and for association. Krishna is very difficult. We read the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how he went into ecstasy thinking about Krishna when he was in the moods of Sri Vrindavan Dham. He went into internal consciousness. And how in the mood of separation, longing for and trying to associate with Krishna, and when his devotees would break him out of these trances of ecstasy, seeing that his body was such in a deformed condition due to the ecstasies, he would become unhappy and angry. But at the same time, it appeared that in that he failed, not failed, but his ecstasy of love fell short to the complete satisfaction. But that's the ecstasy of separation. So that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching, that Krishna takes us into the mood of separation. Prabhupada said, Krishna is always one step ahead of you, at least one, maybe more than that. The whole process of bhakti is to chase after Krishna. And the whole process of bhakti is that you never catch him. Haribo. He stops for some time, gets caught, and then he leaves again. Why does he do that? Just to attract your love even more. Because those who have meager devotion, then when Krishna comes and then they leave, they feel, they go back down. But those who understand that the happiness that comes, or the satisfaction that comes with full surrender to the Lord, will never stop chasing Krishna no matter what. It's a useless affair. You can't catch him. He's so fast. And we can't run that fast. Especially. But he's merciful that he stops once in a while, gets caught, and then runs away again. That's Krishna. That's his love. That's his mercy. Because the mood of separation, there's a nice statement by Srimati Radharani herself, where she's asked, are you more happy when you're with Krishna or when you're separated from Krishna? So Radharani's response is, when I'm with Krishna, there's one Krishna. When I'm separated from him, I see Krishna everywhere. There's so many Krishnas. So the ecstasy of separation continues to pull the heartstrings in such a way that the devotee always wants to associate with Krishna. But in the ecstasy of separation, that association comes through the mood of longing. Even the gopis, although they want to be with Krishna, when they're with Krishna, they think, oh, we're with Krishna, but he's going to leave again. So they can't be happy being with Krishna because they're in anxiety because he's going to leave again. So it's a useless affair. Sounds like it. Spiritual, it says that love of God is a combination of five different ingredients, which are all very sweet and nectarian, but there's a little tinge of black pepper in there, just to give it some spice, some difficulty. That's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's five ingredients that make up love of God, and one of them is black pepper. So it's like a chutney. Krishna is like a chutney. So hot, you can't take him. At the same time, so sweet, you can't give him up. So what is the hotness? He's just ripping away all of our attachments in this material world. And here the cows are just so eager they wait to hear that sound, and when they hear that sound, they come. And Krishna calls each cow by each name. He knows each of the cows. He knows their colors. He knows their different personalities. Each of the cows have their own individual, unique personalities. And there's different kinds of cows. There's Mridanga head cows. There's lion head cows. There's tilak cows with tilak markings on their foreheads, natural tilak. There are white cows and red cows and speckled cows and black cows and yellow cows. I remember we were at New Vrindavan. This was back in the old days. In the very beginning days when the New Vrindavan community was just started. Prabhupada said cow protection. That was one of the features of New Vrindavan. So there was a plan to get more and more cows. So at the beginning, we had four cows. That was the first. We had four cows for a while. And then there was a letter written to Srila Prabhupada. Radhanath Maharaj describes this story in detail, wherein the devotees are asking Prabhupada to give names for the cows. And Prabhupada writes back a letter and says, Chintamani. No, sorry. Sarabi. That's right. Sarabi. So Prabhupada wrote back one name, Sarabi. So we had four cows. We thought, well, maybe Prabhupada didn't understand we have four cows. So he wrote another letter, and Prabhupada wrote back, Sarabi 1, Surabhi 2, Surabhi 3, Surabhi 4. It was easy. Surabhi. We had one cow, her name was Duja. Oh, she was a real rascal. She would give her milk and then turn around and try to drink it. She was real feisty. Oh. I remembered in the different cows, and the cowherd boys would call the cows, and the ooh, 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 we call the cows like that. And the cows would come running down the hill from the pastures into the barn for milking like that. In the old days, we had, at least when I was there, up into the middle 70s, around 1975, 76, we had about, oh, a couple hundred cows. But when I was there in the 80s, we had over 500 cows. So many. It became a little hard to maintain that many cows after a while. But it was nice. We would go right after Bhagavatam class, and we would be encouraged to go out and see the cows right just before breakfast. We would go out and see the cows and pet the cows and, you know, feed them some hay like that, and just be with the cows for a few minutes, maybe a half hour, and then we would go for breakfast. We did that every day. That was a regular thing to go out to see the cows. And then the barn was moved. After the cows became many, the barn was rebuilt and moved in a different place, and then it was a mile away from the temple. So then it was a problem to see the cows. And later on, someone decided to build another barn to bring back the old mood and keep a few cows near the temple. So then we started to see the cows again after breakfast. So wherever there's cows, everything is auspicious. It says that the modern civilization, they've given up cows and they take cars instead, right? Car protection, right? The ecstasy of four wheels, right? Instead of, you know, four hooves. So that's unfortunate. Society has become advanced so much so that the aesthetic, moral, and spiritual values of society has pushed out the most dear animal to Krishna, Krishna's cows. So here we hear all the names of the cows and Krishna's pastimes with the cows. Okay, so any questions? Comments? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaura Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.